This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
The Spider is back. UFC 228 needs a main event, but many other fights have been announced. Could a title shot be on the horizon for Darren Till? Bellator announces their welterweight tournament. We recap UFC Fight Night in Boise, and we are joined by Mauricio Shogun Hua and Mark Iacchese in advance of their fights this weekend at UFC Fight Night in Hamburg, Germany. Thanks to those listening live on TSN Radio in Toronto and Ottawa. And if you're listening to the podcast, please tell your friends to subscribe and give us a listen. Joe is in New York City for Glory, so I'm flying solo today. I appreciate you for joining me as we talk about everything that's going on in the world of MMA. We'll start with Anderson Silva, potentially my favorite fighter of all time. Anderson Silva is really what got me into the UFC. Watching him do what he was doing, to me, was crazy. Because you'd seen martial arts movies, Bruce Lee movies, and then you got to see it lived out in reality with Anderson Silva and what he was able to do in the octagon. He was able to just make people look foolish. Comes in, beats Rich Franklin, becomes the champion. Does so in devastating fashion with those crazy knees. He was just something else, something crazy to watch. And I don't get nervous. I meet a lot of different people because on top of doing the UFC coverage for TSN, I'm also in charge of talent relations, which means bringing guests to our studio, having them do all kinds of different interviews. And I've met some of my heroes growing up. Joe Montana, for example, and really many others. Roddy Piper was here. I don't get fazed. But the first time I was in a room with Anderson Silva, to me, it was like, you know, it was an ethereal experience because I looked up to him so much for what he had done in the UFC, and he had that aura around him. And, you know, I was lucky enough to interview him with his two sons back at UFC 208, the very forgettable card in Brooklyn where he defeated Derek Brunson by a split decision. If I'm not mistaken, I think it was a split decision. And I got to talk to him and his sons. By then, I had already kind of warmed up to being around Anderson. I'd interviewed him a couple times that week at Media Day and before the fights. It was really that first time. It was years before that where I was in a room with Anderson Silva, and I just, you know, I was like, wow, this guy's a star. But my long-winded story about Anderson Silva leads to the fact that he's going to be back in November. So he was flagged for a banned substance late last year. He declared his innocence, but, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. He had already been popped for a banned substance in the past. He claimed that it was due to sexual enhancement pills. Not a lot of people believed him, but regardless, he served the suspension for that. It was just before USADA had kicked in, if I recall. So he served, I think it was a one-year suspension. But now he gets suspended again late last year, and people don't really give him the benefit of the doubt. They think, you know, we've seen this in the past. We're not gonna presume innocence here. We're gonna presume guilt. And Anderson kept a low profile. He said he was innocent from the jump, but didn't say much for many months after that. And that leads us to July of this year, roughly 8 months later, 9 months later, something along those lines. And we come to find that Anderson took a contaminated substance. So he's still guilty in a sense. You do need to monitor what you're putting in your body. But as a result, he gets a one-year suspension that is retroactive to November of last year, and he's able to return this coming November. So this November, we'll see the Spider back in action, potentially. I don't know if it's going to be in November. Could be in December here in Toronto. So if you're going to go to that card in Canada, you know, one guy who called him out is Elias Theodoru. I think that would be a fun fight, given Elias's kind of interesting style on the feet. It would be a fun chess match between him and the Spider. I think that would be a great fight for him to come back to. But we'll have to see what Anderson has left. He's 43 years old, but he's eager to fight again. He says he has 3 fights left on his contract. So, and he still thinks a fight with GSP is possible. I don't really buy that. But I do think a fight with him and GSP would sell. Like, if you made that the main event in Toronto, you'd sell out the building, and that would do buys. And there aren't a whole lot of things that do buys these days. According to reports from Dave Meltzer, UFC 226, the latest incarnation of the UFC pay-per-views, which contained, to me, the best heavyweight fight of all time, a super fight between Daniel Cormier and Stipe Miocic, did north of 500,000 buys. Now, that's not a promising sign, because what can you do? Like, if that's not going to sell, What will? What do you put out there that's going to sell pay-per-views given the roster you have? Now, Brock Lesnar is going to sell pay-per-views, so that's an obvious answer. If you're going to do Brock versus anybody, whether it would have been Stipe or Cormier, I think Cormier sells a little bit more because Cormier will do a better job of selling that fight. But if you look at anything outside of Brock Lesnar right now that's in the UFC, of course, Conor McGregor, if he comes back, that does numbers. But that's really it. It's those two guys and George St. Pierre. So nobody really current, in terms of current champions, is really moving the needle right now in terms of pay-per-views. Now, what's the cause of that? I don't know. Is it just a lack of interest in these specific personalities? Who knows? But you can't make people like fighters. They're either going to like them or they're not. Something they're going to gravitate to them somehow or they're not. It's impossible to create a superstar. I think we've learned this. You know, you can put as much money and promotion into a fighter, and they're not always going to hit. It's actually quite rare that they do hit. We saw Conor McGregor as really the latest example of somebody who hit, caught lightning in a bottle, and took off from there. But other than that, what do you do? There don't seem to be a whole lot of answers. Now, on the subject of Stipe and Cormier, before we go any further, Stipe says that he deserves an instant rematch against Cormier to try to get that title back. And he's 100% right. In a meritocracy, from a sport angle, sport perspective, he 100% deserves an immediate rematch. He was the heavyweight champion, really the greatest heavyweight champion the UFC's ever had, the most consistent UFC heavyweight champion that they've had. But let's not forget, the UFC is not a sport. It's a business. It's a promotion. It promotes a sport. So when you think about what's fair and what's right in combat sports, it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant in boxing. It's irrelevant in the UFC, in terms of mainstream combat sports, even Strikeforce, irrelevant. You want to put butts in the seats. And if you want to put butts in the seats and you want people to buy pay-per-views, fairness is irrelevant, completely irrelevant. If they could make a fight between GSP and Conor next year if Conor beats Khabib, GSP's not first in line. The winner of Dustin Poirier versus Alvarez, most likely you could say, is first in line. But it doesn't matter. If you can make a GSP versus Conor super fight, you make a GSP versus Conor super fight, period. You try to create a three-division champion in GSP. That's a huge story. That would be the biggest fight they'd ever do. I think Conor versus Khabib might end up being the biggest fight they ever do once it happens. But if you do GSP versus Conor after that, whew. The 2 million buy pay-per-view. And I'm not 100% convinced that Conor versus Khabib does better numbers than Conor versus Nate Diaz does. Who knows? But I will say that a GSP versus Conor super fight, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a Canadian, you've got a potential three-division champion in GSP. It would be crazy. And that would be Conor's first ever lightweight title defense if Conor is able to beat Khabib. Not to say that he will be, because that's a tough fight. It's a tall order to try to beat Khabib. Khabib's undefeated. But that would be a super fight. UFC 228 coming up in Dallas, Texas. A bunch of fights were just announced, and a lot of good ones with that. So we've got a flyweight women's championship fight between Nico Montaño and Valentina Shevchenko. Shevchenko trying to win her first UFC title. I expect she'll be an 8-1 favorite in this fight against the reigning champion, Nico Montaño, who I believe has a 4-2 record. Jessica Andrade versus Karolina Kowalkiewicz. Incredible fight. Andrade is crazy exciting to watch when it comes to the women's strawweight division. Yair Rodriguez versus Zabit Magomedsharipov in a fight between two of the best prospects at featherweight. That might be the best fight on the card right now. There's no way that fight's not going to meet expectations to be exciting. Aljamain Sterling versus Cody Stamann. That's a fun one in the bantamweight division. It's a fight that both of them have wanted for quite some time. Carla Esparza versus Tatiana Suarez. That's an awesome fight as well. We saw what Esparza just did against Gedalia. She lost, but put up a heck of a fight. And Tatiana Suarez has been unstoppable. She hasn't lost a round. She's been unbelievable. And now you've got two of the best wrestlers, probably the two best wrestlers at the women's strawweight division. But Suarez is a level above. I mean, Suarez was a potential Olympian. Suarez has been untouchable. So that's a tall order for Carla Esparza. It doesn't seem like she's shying away from it, though. Jimmy Rivera versus John Dodson. Rivera trying to get back on track after ending what was a crazy winning streak. I think it was 20-plus fight winning streak before his loss to Marlon Moraes. Ryan Benoit against Roberto Sanchez, Charles Byrd versus Darren Stewart, Jeff Neal versus Frank Camacho also announced for that card. But we do not have a main event. And, you know, what do they say? Where there's smoke, there's fire. We've got Darren Till on Twitter, on social media, calling out Tyron Woodley. Now, that would be a crazy fight. But, lest we forget, we have an interim champion right now. We have Colby Covington. Now, Covington was on Chael Sonnen's show recently. He said he is battling an injury. I think he might have gone and, you know, had some surgery recently. He was saying he was a little bit banged up after his last fight. But, be that as it may, when the UFC needs a main event, they're willing to pull out all the stops. They're willing to do crazy things. They tried to do Nate Diaz versus GSP a while back. You know, there was the potential of a Cody Garbrandt versus Frankie Edgar fight. Really, the way I look at it is there aren't a whole lot of options for UFC 228 in terms of a headliner. You're not going to headline with Conor versus Khabib. You've already got the bantamweight and flyweight titles in the men's divisions on the line at UFC 227, so you can rule that out. You've got featherweight. Max Holloway's out, but you could do an interim featherweight fight. Brian Ortega's waiting. Ortega is Mexican, and in Dallas, there's a massive Hispanic population. Just under 50% of the population in Dallas are Hispanic. I think it's in the 40. It's somewhere in the 40th percentile. So that would be a good fit. But then you've also got to consider that the contenders at featherweight right now, they're tied up. You've got UFC in Calgary, Jeremy Stephens versus Jose Aldo. Those are two of the top contenders in the division. But Chad Mendes just won a fight, and he came out of that fight without a scratch. I don't know how many fights, I don't even know how many strikes he even absorbed in that fight. He looked incredible. Could a Mendes-Ortega fight be in the main event of UFC 228 for the interim title? That's a fight I'd love to see. Because Mendes is a killer. Mendes's only losses have come to Frankie Edgar, Jose Aldo, and Conor McGregor. This isn't the guy who loses to the best of the best. Ortega right now is trying to prove that he's the best of the best. A win over Mendes just continues to push the narrative that this is going to be the guy that beats Max Holloway. Now, in terms of Max Holloway, who knows when he's coming back, but that's a potential main event, UFC 228. Might not be the juiciest main event, but it would be a main event no less. Lightweight, as I said, is off the table. And then you've got welterweight. Tyron Woodley hasn't fought since July of last year. He says he's ready to fight. Says he's all healed up. Covington really the X factor there. Because Covington apparently battling injuries. So what do you do there? Darren Till, right now the number one contender, just beat Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. He seems to think that there's a fight offer out there. He's been calling out Woodley on social media. Woodley's playing dumb. But that's a fight that could do some major numbers because Darren Till is a guy that at least people inside the sport have been gravitating towards as a future star. So Darren Till versus Woodley is a potential main event. Middleweight, Robert Whittaker with some devastating news this week saying he's not going to be able to fight again this year. So we're going to go through all of 2018 without him having a title defense. He did beat Yoel Romero. I do remember that. Believe me, my memory's not that bad just yet. But that was a non-title fight. Yoel Romero missed weight. So, Whittaker still doesn't have a title defense under his belt, despite winning at least the interim title last July. So, he's out this year. So, that fight, which I thought was going to take place in Toronto because the finale for the season where him and Gastelum are coaching against one another, that is at the very end of November. So, then the next pay-per-view after that is Toronto. So, it seems like a good fit, but it appears that fight's not going to happen. Then you go up to light heavyweight. Daniel Cormier, he wants to fight. But right now, if you look at UFC 227, you've got Gustafsson fighting against Uzdemir there. And then, of course, there's Shogun Hua fighting Anthony Smith this weekend. Would they be able to turn something around that quickly? I don't think so. I don't know. I mean, Daniel Cormier just fought. So that one might be off the table. Then heavyweight, of course, is also Daniel Cormier. So same story. He's waiting for Brock Lesnar at heavyweight. That fight is certainly not going to happen in September. You go to the women's divisions, you've got strawweights, you've got Rose Namajunas. She's around. She said she wants to take it easy for the rest of the year, but you could put her into action. Who she'd face, I don't know, because it seems a lot of the contenders are tied up. I thought Andrade would be the obvious fit. And then you've got a ton of contenders on that card. You've got Suarez, and Esparza on the card. You've got Kovalkiewicz and Andraj on the card. So who would Rose face? And that's what the big question is there. I mean, if she was willing to fight, you could pull one of those women from their fight, the fight between Andraj and Kovalkiewicz. Kovalkiewicz has a win over Rose. Andraj is, to me, is the surefire number one contender, other than Joanna, and Joanna's not going to get another crack at Rose right away. She's lost two in a row to Rose. So that's a potential. You look at flyweight, that fight's already on the card. You've got Montano versus Shevchenko. Bantamweight, Amanda Nunes says she's not able to compete at that event. She's injured. She's battling injuries. Because they were trying, you know, apparently Cyborg wants to fight Amanda Nunes for the featherweight title. And then, of course, you've got Cyborg. I mean, Cyborg at featherweight. Could you give Cyborg another fight at featherweight? The problem is you've got a lot of these women that she's been calling out are on the Ultimate Fighter. Because they're starting to finally jumpstart that division and put some fighters in the division that can eventually face Cyborg. Now, it's not a foregone conclusion that Cyborg is back with the UFC next year. Her contract is ending soon, and she wants to go into boxing. Amanda Nunes has signed a contract about agreement for December, the end-of-year card, where she would fight Cyborg in the first women's super fight, a champion versus champion women's fight, where you'd have the bantamweight champion Nunes contending for the featherweight championship against Cyborg. So, really not a whole lot of options for 228. And then when you keep that in mind, you've still got 229 to fill, and that's a Madison Square Garden card. Or sorry, that's the October card where, you know, they're saying that Conor versus Khabib is an option. You don't need much, you know, on top of that. If you've got that as your main event, you're pretty much set. You're good. But then you've got Madison Square Garden. What are you going to put there? That's where names like GSP start to come up. You've got the card in Toronto, beginning of December. What are you going to put there? I thought it was going to be the middleweight fight. Apparently not available. And then you've got the end of year card. So if you do Cyborg versus Nunes there, you're pretty set. You stack that card, and that's a good end of year card, because that's a real super fight, at least in terms of the women's divisions. Would it sell? I don't know. Who knows? You know, a lot of people say they haven't pushed Nunes well enough, but what more of a push can you give Nunes? She fought on two of the biggest cards they've ever had and won on both of them. Beat Miesha Tate in the main event of UFC 200 and beat Ronda Rousey in the main event of UFC 207. They did massive buys. Huge box office. So people have seen what Amanda Nunes can do. She dominated both of those fights. She crushed two of the best women's fighters of all time in those fights. So if she's not going to sell off of that, even a win over Cyborg, I mean, is that gonna do it? I don't know. She beat Ronda. She was an underdog against Ronda. Beat Ronda in seconds. Made her look like a punching bag. What more can Nunes do to become a box office star? I don't think there's anything she can do. And it's not her fault. Like I mentioned earlier, fans decide what they gravitate towards. And Amanda Nunes ain't it, unfortunately. I love watching Amanda Nunes fight. I think she's the best women's fighter of all time based on her resume. But it is what it is. So you look at that Darren Till versus Woodley fight, and that's a fight I'd love to see. But I can understand why Woodley doesn't want to take it, because that's a tough ask. You're expecting to fight a mostly grappling-based fighter in Colby Covington, and now they want you to fight a striker like Darren Till? I don't know. That's a tall order. But money talks. If the money's there, maybe he takes it. I don't know. It would be interesting to see, because Dallas is a great city. The fans showed up last time they were there last year. I loved it there. If you ever get a chance to go to Dallas, you should go. It was completely different from what I expected. You know, you think Dallas, you think of big cities, you think big box stores. I saw one McDonald's the whole time I was there. I think it was at the airport. I was very surprised. I loved it there. If they send me, I can't wait to go back. It's a great city. Bellator announced they're doing a welterweight tournament, and they're saying that every fight's going to be five rounds. Now, that's crazy. You're going to run these guys through the ringer. We understand you think you have the best welterweight division in combat sports, and you very well might. I mean, it's a very stacked division. Not to take anything away from the UFC's welterweight division, because it's pretty stacked in its own right. But you're talking about five-round fights for everybody? Back-to-back-to-back five-round fights over the course of a year? It's like, good luck. You're going to get injuries. I know, and they're saying the title's on the line from the jump. So when Rory McDonald competes in this tournament, his title's going to be on the line. But we've seen Rory take big injury hiatuses. You know, we've seen him take an injury hiatus something happens to him against Musasi, and it very well could, because Musasi is not, no joke, and I think Musasi is favored in that fight. What happens to your tournament? So I do like the big thinking. I like that they're thinking ahead and they're thinking big. Believe me, that's the way you want to think if you're an organization that's trying to compete with the UFC. Think big. But at what cost? At what cost? Let's look ahead to UFC. Let's look back to UFC Fight Night in Boise. That was an interesting card. I think there were some big things to come of it. And to me, the biggest was Chad Mendes beating Miles Jury within 3 minutes of the first round. It was a bit of a staring contest at first, feeling each other out. But Mendes, you know, he picked the right spot. He hit it right on the number. He knew what he was doing against Miles Jury, who looked great at featherweight, and dispatched them in 3 minutes. And that's why I'm making a case that Mendes should be next in line. If you're going to do a fight in September for the interim featherweight title, Mendes should be the guy. No disrespect to Jeremy Stephens. It shouldn't be Aldo, even if Aldo beats Stephens. Because Aldo, you know, this guy's been in the mix forever. So what happens if Aldo ends up beating Ortega and becomes the interim champion again? He's going to fight Holloway for the third time? That's a tough sell. I mean, is he worthy of a fight against Ortega? Absolutely. Aldo is by far the best featherweight that we've ever seen. Let's not forget how great Aldo is. I mean, if you want to know how great Aldo is, this is his first televised fight in the UFC, the one in Calgary. All he's been in title fights. This is actually his first non-title fight also. His first non-title fight, first televised fight. Aldo has been at the top of the mountain for a decade. So is he worthy of a fight against Ortega? Absolutely. But we're talking about a fight card at the end of July here between Stevens and Aldo. And I don't think that fight's going to end early. These are two tough, tough guys. If that fight goes five rounds, there's no way one of those guys is going to be able to turn it around and fight at UFC 228. However, the big thing that nobody's pointing out when they say, oh, Stevens should get the shot. Tickets for that pay-per-view, UFC 228, go on sale on the 27th of July, the day before the UFC is in Calgary. You can postpone the ticket on sale date, sure. But usually you want to have a main event in place by that date. They got 8 days. 8 days from right now to put together a main event. And from what I understand, they don't have anything right now. That's why this Till conversation's come up. Maybe that's what they're trying to do, is that Till versus Wonderboy. Sorry, Till versus Woodley. So if that's what they're trying to do, they probably don't have much else that they can do. I mean, we've gone through the options. We've gone through potential title fight possibilities. However, once again, I'm a proponent of fights that matter, not necessarily title fights. So if you go through the UFC rankings, I'm going to pull them up right now. I like the idea of super fights. I like the idea of, and you know, a super fight doesn't need to be title versus title. I like interesting matchups. You know, Gustafson's fighting, but what about a fight like a Gustafson versus Francis Ngannou? It's one of those fights where you don't really think, you don't really think about it. What about Yoel Romero? Yoel Romero wants to fight again. Well, who could you put him against that would make it fun and interesting? Maybe you do Romero versus Gastelum for the interim title. Who knows? Romero wants to fight at light heavyweight now, though. So I don't know. They have to think outside the box, I think, in some of these situations. Because you look at who they have on their roster, and you got to try to put something cool together, something fun together. But then you look through these rankings, you think, wow, all these guys are tied up right now. Would a main event between Blades and Ngannou sell? It's not really a main event caliber fight right now, at least for where they stand in the divisions. I don't think Stipe is going to want to fight. He's just about to have a baby in a couple weeks. So he's probably out. You look at all these big names. A lot of them are injured. Rockhold is injured. I'm not sure Weidman's ready to come back yet. So all these names, they're pretty big. Do you do a bantamweight interim title fight between Holm and Vieira? I mean, you're reaching there, and I don't think that headline's a pay-per-view. So it's just the options are not many for the UFC right now in terms of filling a main event. So I like the thinking with Till versus Wonderboy, or versus Woodley. I keep making the same mistake. The W's are throwing me off. And we've seen Till versus Wonderboy already. But Till versus Woodley would be interesting. But then again, you're just ignoring the fact that you have an interim champion sitting there. who just fought a couple months ago. Not like the guy's been inactive. So let's go to this Boise card. Again, let's. I mentioned Mendez, and I mentioned why I think he has a case to fight for the interim featherweight title. Another featherweight that looked very good was Alexander Volkanovski, beating Darren Elkins by unanimous decision. 30-27, 29-28, 29-28, and I think those two 29-28s might have been pity rounds because Volkanovski looked really good. Looked really, really good. Junior Dos Santos is back. He introduces Blagoje Ivanov to the world, former World Series of Fighting heavyweight champion, by getting a clean sheet against him. 50-45, 50-45, 50-45 on the judges' scorecards. And that was the right call because Ivanov looked like he was just a little bit outclassed by Dos Santos. It wasn't a blowout. I mean, the rounds were pretty close. But you could say that all of them went to Dos Santos, and I've got no problem with that, and that's how I scored it as well. Sage Northcutt finally gets a win at welterweight in the UFC. He was 0-2 at welterweight. Welterweight looks to be his new home. He beat Zach Otto. And he came back from some adversity in that second round. Tired Otto out, knocked him out in the second round. It was a good win for Sage. And I think that Sage at welterweight makes more sense for him in terms of the composition of his body, but he just has not had a lot of success there, and he's undefeated at lightweight. So 6-2, I believe, in the UFC now. So good for Sage to finally get that win at welterweight, and I think that's where he's going to stay. We saw one of the craziest knockouts that I've seen: Nico Price against Randy Brown. Randy Brown gets on top of Nico Price and gets knocked out by hammer fists from bottom. That's some savagery right there. You don't see that very often. Great win for him. Nice to see Kat Zingano back in the win column. 30-27, 30-27, 30-26 against Marion Renault. It was exactly how I called it before the fight. If you go and watch the Periscope preview that I did, I said that I thought that Zingano and Aguilar were just going to be, just outclass their opponents, and they did on that night. Nice to see Aguilar back in the win column as well. So I guess really the trend here was seeing a lot of fighters that kind of disappointed, like Northcutt at welterweight. Mendez, I think, had lost 3 of 4, again, against really tough competition. Aguilar, Catanzaro, fighters that are better than they've been showing as of late, getting good wins. So kudos to all of them for getting back into the win column at UFC Fight Night in Boise. So before we get into UFC Fight Night in Hamburg, we're going to talk to a couple of the fighters that are on this card. We're going to start with one of the fighters in the main event. That's Mauricio Shogun Hua. So I will preface this by saying this interview, the person answering the questions is not Shogun, it's his translator. I did edit it for the sake of really your listening pleasure, because I don't think you want to hear me ask a question, the question get translated into Portuguese, an answer in Portuguese, and then that answer get translated to English. So I did everybody a service here. You can thank me. Send me thank you emails and thank yous on Twitter, because I'm just giving you the answers. We're going to have the answers from his translator. So thanks to Shogun. And I call him Shogun. The reason I call him Shogun is because I worked with Mauro Ranallo. And Mauro Ranallo used to always call him Shogun, and Ranallo used to call his fights in pride. So if Mauro Ranallo is going to call him Shogun, and I call him Shogun, and he doesn't correct me, that's going to be that's the way I think he pronounces it. So I'm going to give him that kind of respect. And we'll start off with Shogun right here on the TSN MMA show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
All right, I'm joined now by Mauricio Shogun Hua, legend in the sport, former UFC light heavyweight champion. So, Shogun, you're starting, you're fighting at UFC Hamburg this Sunday, main event against Anthony Smith. So you've been a little bit inactive. You've been fighting once a year. What sort of injuries have been plaguing you, and are you hoping to be more active?
Well, actually, it's a combination of factors that have been hindering my rhythm a little bit. In the last 3 years. First was Ultimate Fighter Brazil. I had to do the show, and because of the show, there was, how it goes, that time that I had to respect and everything before I could actually fight. And then later on, I had a couple of minor injuries that weren't serious, but they pretty much happened to me like after the fights or stuff like that, so I had to take some time off to recover and to rehab. And by the time I was about to get in rhythm again, another year had passed, And recently, there's also the whole situation with the Chile card and then moving. So there's always something that's been keeping me sidelined for a little longer than I wish. But it's like a matter of a lot of small coincidences.
you had lost 4 out of 5 fights, but now you've come back. You've won 3 in a row. What changed? What was the thing that made you so successful again?
Well, it's tough to say, but I think the focus and the training, I think now I'm more experienced. I consider myself an experienced guy, and I have been very focused on what to do and how to do it. So I think it's a combination of things.
Recently, Daniel Cormier became the light heavyweight and heavyweight champion simultaneously. In a recent interview, he mentioned you by name as a potential opponent for him to defend his light heavyweight championship for the last time. Does this fight mean more to you now? Are the stakes higher, knowing that you could eventually get a title shot from beating Anthony Smith?
No, actually, you can't really think about a title shot or a belt when you have a fight lined up. And in this case, I have to fight Anthony Smith, which it's a pretty tough fight, and you can't really think about anything else. You know, you have to get to a title shot, you have to win fights, and each win helps you towards that goal. So right now, all my focus is on that fight. Obviously, I got very happy and flattered, per se, to hear what Daniel has been saying. And it's nice that he considers me as a potential contender, but that's all pretty much worthless until, you know, I fight. So now I have to concentrate on my fight and see. And after the fight, Sunday, then I'll see what I want to do next and what will happen.
Anthony Smith, you mentioned him. He looked very impressive against Rashad Evans, but he hasn't really beaten a lot of high-quality opponents. You're a pretty big underdog coming into this fight. Are people underestimating your abilities, given that they haven't seen you in a while?
Well, no, I don't. It's tough to say. I mean, he's a young guy. He's coming from a good performance. He's a tough guy. And like I said, he's a younger guy. So I think maybe that's why, and he deserves to be seen as a favorite. So he's the favorite. Responsibility is his. I'll do my best, and I hope to be able to break the odds and beat the favorite.
Now, I know you just touched down in Hamburg, but news came out regarding Anderson Silva that it was deemed that his positive drug test was due to a contaminated substance. So he's eligible to return in November from a suspension, which is good news for Anderson. I know he wants to continue fighting. What do you think Anderson means to the sport, and is there anybody that you think that he should fight in his return fight that would be an interesting fight?
Well, I think for our sport, it's great that he's coming back. He is an icon of the sport, a legend of the sport. So it's good to have him back and back in action. I think it benefits the sport as a whole, and I'm happy for him and happy for our sport.
You were originally supposed to fight Volkan Uzdemir. He's been moved to UFC 227 in Los Angeles against Alexander Gustafsson. Did you think that he was a good matchup for you, and how does he compare to Anthony Smith?
Well, Uzdemir is a very good fighter. I think it would have been a great fight because he's a well-ranked guy, has been in a good phase of his career. And I think changing to Anthony Smith didn't change that much for me as far as a matchup goes, because they're both strikers. So I think it wasn't that different of a fight for me.
Now, Daniel Cormier did what he did at age 39. You're only 36 years old. It seems like you've been around for such a long time. But how much longer do you hope to continue fighting for?
Well, yes, I think I consider myself still a young guy, and I still have the same kind of performance in training. I still feel good about my body when I'm training, feel good with energy and everything. So I know that I might still have my peak performance yet to come. You know, it's as far as I still feel good, as long as I still feel good training and I still enjoy doing it as I'm doing right now. Right now I still enjoy fighting. I'm happy to be here. I'm training well. I feel the same energy when I'm training. So as far as I'm feeling like that, I'll continue going. And who knows, maybe my peak performance is still yet to come.
Shogun, obrigado. Itena, ótimo dia.
Obrigado. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Shogun Mauricio Hua. A lot of pressure on him for this particular fight, because if he gets a win, we've heard his name on the lips of Daniel Cormier as a potential opponent at light heavyweight. Cormier wants to fight twice before he hangs up the gloves in March of next year. He says his fight with Lesnar is going to be his last. He said that this week. So So it looks like a fight with John Jones is just not in the cards right now. It's unfortunate because I think that's the fight that the Cormier wants. But if Cormier is, you know, has this deadline and that's when he wants to hang up the gloves, I mean, money talks. They say, listen, you know, you're the champ. You just defended your light heavyweight title and your heavyweight title. We want you to come back, fight John Jones for one of the two titles. We're going to pay you this amount of money. Who knows? Maybe he decides the juice is worth the squeeze. But Hua, to me, is a kind of an easy target for Cormier. Now, Hua would have a very long win streak, probably the longest at light heavyweight, you know, with four wins in a row if he gets it done against Anthony Smith. So does that warrant a title fight? I don't know. If you look at who Smith's beaten, you're not talking about, you know, a world beater here. Not to take anything away from Anthony Smith, but I don't know if that warrants a title shot. But I think it's a safe fight for Cormier. I'll just leave it at that. Our next guest is also on UFC Fight Night in Hamburg, Germany. That would be Mark Diakese, fighter who came into the UFC undefeated, won three in a row, and has since dropped two. If you look at his career, it's been kind of up and down, you know, for what he's done in the UFC. Beats Teemu Pakkalin by knockout in 30 seconds, but then comes back with two losses, a loss to Drakkar Klose, split decision, back last July at the Ultimate Fighter finale during International Fight Week, rather. And then a submission loss to Dan Hooker at the end of year card in Vegas, UFC 219. And Hooker's gone on to great things since then, two straight wins. After that fight that has pretty much put him into the mix at lightweight. So we'll speak with Mark Diakese and see where his mindset is at for this fight against Nasrat Haqparast at UFC Fight Night in Hamburg, Germany. And here he is on the TSN MMA show. All right, I'm pleased to be joined now by Mark Diakese, who's fighting in Hamburg this weekend against Nasrat Haqparast. So you're in Hamburg right now?
Yes, I am.
How have you enjoyed the experience thus far? Have you been to Germany in the past?
Last time I was here, with my teammate, Scott Askim. I was in his corner.
Okay, great. Well,
and that's about it, but I haven't been anywhere.
How long have you been there for? When did you get in?
I got here Sunday, just to try to get used to the timing, because I came here from Florida.
Oh, so you've been here for quite some time in Hamburg. So, Have you ran into your opponent or anybody from his team since you've been here?
Yeah, I ran into him once. I was coming down on the stairs and I seen him. He just said hello and I said hello back. Got anything know of it, but now I've found out things he's been saying and stuff. Things are going to change.
Well, you've had a bit of a rocky road as of late in the UFC. Two straight losses, one to Dan Hooker and one very close decision loss to Drakkar Klose. But you did start off your career with three straight wins. You have a habit of beating guys in the first round in devastating fashion. Is that what you're hoping to do again this time around?
Well, it is what. Well, I'm taking this fight as it comes. I, you know, I'm coming out very aggressive. I'm putting everything into it. So we'll see. I could see ending with a finish.
Absolutely. Well, a lot of your fights have, so that wouldn't be a huge shocker to those watching. How has training been out in Florida? You've been enjoying it?
Yeah, training's been really, really good this time. It's been more like specific stuff. And, you know, last time I felt like I was learning, but, you know, because I was a top prospect going into a big gym, but didn't really pay a lot of attention. It's more of a just, you know, as a prospect, you know, if he's a good fighter, whatever. I was just training, you know what I mean? This time, you know, basically see my holes, what I have, what's wrong with me. And Mike Brown sort of took me to one side, you know, working with me twice a week, and I'm sparring a lot of higher-ranked guys, so I'm just more confident than I'm going in. I've learned a lot.
I hear you've developed something of an unlikely friendship with Kyoji Horiguchi. Can you tell me more about that?
Kyoji, yeah. Since I've been faced him, I was 82, I've always been friends with Kyoji. He's a really nice guy. Nice guy to be around.
Absolutely. And I'm surprised he's not in the UFC. I know that he wasn't released or anything, but they didn't renew his contract, and he has been doing some great things overseas.
Yeah, I think he should get re-signed. I think the guy is tough, you know what I mean? I think it will make a great matchup again with Demetrius Johnson. I think he should get re-signed.
Yeah, he's only gotten better. And I agree with you. I think he's the guy. I actually thought he was going to be the guy to beat Demetrius down the line, but they gave him the title shot probably a little bit early. Now that he's continues to establish himself, that would be definitely an awesome matchup. Great to see what he could do again.
Yeah, watching Spire is crazy. The guy is so fast, it's unbelievable. Things that he does, you're like, wow, how did you do that?
Yeah, these flyweights, they can move.
He seems to show him some tricks as well. Yeah, he's got some tricks so I'm just showing me. So I'm like, yeah, I'll take that.
You've had kind of an interesting life. I mean, you grew up in the Republic of Congo, and then at age 12, you decided to move to England with your uncle. Do you still keep in touch with your family in Congo? Or are you still? Do they follow your career?
You know, I don't really pay much attention to that, but I'm sure that they do. Right now, I'm just too focused on my career, trying to do other things. I speak to them now and then, but I don't, you know, like when I'm fighting, I don't have like anything like family, whatever, coming to support me like that. So I call myself a one-man army. So I'm going in and fight, like, you know, to prove a point, and that's what I'm going to do Sunday as well.
I mean, you do have two kids and your wife, but other than that, I mean, do you feel like that helps you, that you don't have you know, such big expectations on you from people around you, that like you said, you are kind of a one-man show?
I don't really think of anything like that, if I'm honest. I just enjoy what I do, and that's what I like doing. I don't like to think too much over it, because when I started doing MMA, I did it because I enjoyed it. So if I don't want to put pressure on myself thinking about other things around it.
Does it feel like you've had almost like three lives? I mean, you grew up in Congo, you move to England, you get bullied, you don't really know how to speak English when you arrive, and people are bullying you. You overcome that, you become a fighter, you're undefeated for some time, and now you're on a losing skid. So it seems like your life has just been, it's almost like different chapters. And what do you think the next chapter takes you to?
The next chapter, I would say I would get a last laugh, and that's what I feel. I feel like, you know, it's always me getting a last laugh. I feel like this is building me to be another person, you know. I've seen the ups and downs, you know. Before, I never lost a fight. I knew how it felt. Now I've lost a fight, I know how it feels. So now I'm ready to go ahead and, you know, carry on my journey.
When you did lose that first fight, how did that feel? You know, what were the feelings like knowing that you had won 12 in a row before that?
Yeah, that fight, it hurt me more than anything, because I felt like I won it, even though it kicked my legs, I think, first round. It got me, but I felt like I won first and third round, last round. You know, but I'm not, you know, complain about it. I just accepted it. The last one, my last loss, I actually just laughed. And I knew it's not about being tough anymore. It's about, you know, being smart. And that's what I've really worked on, having a game plan, not just trying to pick guys up with my pure strength. It's about technique, making them carry my weight and stuff. It's going to be fun, this fight. Honestly, I'm looking forward to this fight.
And do you think you have a pretty big advantage over Nasrat?
Yes, the main reason, because I just feel he's not really been tested. If for Marcin held, I know he lost, but Marcin held came to ATT, no disrespect. He's not a striker, he's a grappler. He wants to take you down every time. I'm comfortable to go on ground, I'm comfortable standing up. If I want to play boring with Nasrat, I can, but I don't want it like that, because I know if I take him down, he's not going to get up. You know what I mean? I want to fight MMA, so that's what I'm saying. And I've had five fights in the UFC, so I know how everything feels like. I know if you find your hometown, I know the pressure you'll have. I know everything, so I'm just very prepared for this.
Nasrat doesn't have a win in the UFC. You have several. Do you feel like that gives you a leg up as well? You just fought better competition?
I just feel like, I know I've had two losses, but I feel like if you look at my two losses, the guy I fought, virtually doing well, you know, what's his name? Dan Hooker, my last fight, is on a four winning streak now, so I'm like, you know, my fights have been picked. I'm picking them fights. So right now, I'm just like, you know, I've seen it all. Nasrat is not harder fight than the guys I've just fought. You know what I mean? To me personally, I don't think this guy, he can beat me. To me, it's about testing myself. I don't think he can beat me. That's why I want this fight so bad.
And I'm guessing if you do win this, you're looking for a step up in competition the next time around?
Yeah, for a step up. Yeah, definitely.
What do you think has improved about your game over the last, I guess, since the end of last year when you faced Dan Hooker? What has gotten better? What do you think gives you more of an advantage in this upcoming fight?
It's just different because I do feel like before, I just went into ATT as like a fighter, And, you know, I just given to any coach, you know, to coach me. Whereas now, I actually went to Mike Brown myself. I said, "Yo, Mike, I need help. Like, you could actually help me." And he took me to one side now, and I'm working with him. Like, Dean Thomas is cornering me. You know, everything is specific. I'm working with, like, strategy. It's not just about being tough, going in, swinging punches. It's different now. It's about being technical. Like, when I'm wrestling, I got to know where my body is, where I'm positioning my stuff. Everything got to be calculated. I can't just do it for fun of it because I'm fighting. Because I realized that in UFC, it's not just about being a fighter, trying to be tough and, you know, going to fight. Because anything could happen. So you got to be cautious, understanding where you are, and be smart. And that's what I think I have now.
Outside of training, when you're in Florida, what do you do with your time?
Pardon?
What do you do with your time outside of fighting in Florida? When you're outside of training, when you're in Florida, what kind of activities do you partake in outside of the walls of training?
Honestly, in Florida, I don't do anything else. I train 3 times a day, and Sundays I go on a run or church. And sometimes I go fishing with KLG, and that's about it. I don't really have, like, 3 times to say, oh, I can go and party. There's nothing like that in Florida, and that's why I like it.
Yeah, I guess you guys aren't right out in Miami or anything, right? Which ATT do you train at?
Coconut Creek.
Oh, so the big one, okay. Yeah, so that's...
Yeah, the big one, yeah.
For those that aren't really familiar, Coconut Creek is kind of like a suburb.
Huh?
Yeah, Coconut Creek is kind of like a suburb. There's not a whole lot going on there.
Yeah, that's what I really like, that position where I'm at, because I'm not doing anything else. But, and I feel like, it's, to me, it's like a buffet, all you can eat, because I have different places I can go to. And I'm picking one of the best guys for boxing. And I've got Mike Brown. I'm like, you can't get better than that. I've got Colby Covington, strength conditioning coach. Right now, my fitness, I feel like at another level. So I'm like, I want to test these things I've been working on. I want to see how it's working. I feel too good, you know, not to use it.
Making a comparison about buffets in Florida is a good comparison, because there are a lot of buffets in Florida, not just at ATT.
What do you mean?
Oh, there's tons of buffet restaurants out there. I go to Florida very often.
To be honest, I haven't really been to many. I know one place called Bruce Room. It's there for just hot wings and sweet potato fries. It's pretty nice.
All right, Mark.
And the ice cream. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of food out in Florida. It's a nice place, and the weather's always good. So I'm glad you're enjoying it out there and learning from the best.
Thank you.
All right. Well, best of luck this weekend against Nasrat Haqparast. We're going to be watching that. The card's going to be on TSN up here in Canada, and we appreciate your time and look forward to seeing you get back on the winning track at this event.
Thank you. I appreciate your time.
That was Mark Diakese fighting at UFC Fight Night in Hamburg this weekend. We've got some breaking news from the one and only Ariel Helwani of ESPN. Volkan Oezdemir is out of UFC 227 due to an injury. He was scheduled to face Alexander Gustafsson. Tough break for Oezdemir, whose fights just keep getting moved around. He had the visa issues that precluded him from fighting Shogun the first time. He was supposed to fight him this weekend in Hamburg. Probably for the best that he wasn't, because that would have been the loss of a main event during fight week. So that fight's off UFC 227. However, the good news is for the UFC that maybe you could put Gustafsson against somebody at the at UFC 228 in the main event. Gustafsson versus Francis Ngannou. Why not? Let's do it. But he is out, and they're working on a replacement potentially for UFC 227. But he may not fight on the card per Ariel Helwani. And in other news, Sugar Sean O'Malley, eyeing a return in October, wants to fight Alejandro Perez, who just fought this past week in Boise at UFC 229. Also reported by Helwani this morning, Sage Northcutt quietly fighting out his UFC contract last week in Boise, does not have a new deal. So that's what we've got from Ariel Helwani. Lots of news. Always like to see breaking news when I can get to it before the show ends, so that we have something to talk about. So, I mean, Gustafsson, again, I think Gustafsson, if you have him fight somebody big at 228, you can make a case that would be a main event. So we've got UFC Hamburg this weekend. Let's take a look at it from top to bottom. We've got Mauricio Hua against Anthony Smith. Anthony Smith, a pretty big favorite in this spot, which kind of surprises me, because if you look at what Shogun's done and what Anthony Smith has done. Obviously, the resumes speak for themselves. I think a lot of people are banking on Shogun not having much left in the tank. So, you know, the line has tightened up a little bit, but Anthony Smith seems to be getting a lot of love in this spot, and I don't know how warranted it is. But Smith looked incredible against Rashad Evans, so don't get me wrong. I think Smith has a lot of good going for him. Co-main event, Glover Teixeira versus Corey Anderson. Now, this is an interesting fight, but I just think Glover's better everywhere. I know Anderson's a very good wrestler, but so is Glover. Glover's a very, very underrated grappler. Glover's getting up there in age, and Anderson looked good in his last fight, but I really have a strong lean towards Glover Teixeira, especially with Anderson taking this fight on short notice. So, you know, the line for this fight, Glover Teixeira, a minus 160 favorite. And I think that that's a little low, to be honest. Abu Azaitar is making his UFC debut against Vitor Miranda. You got Marcin Tybura versus Stefan Struve. That's a fun heavyweight fight. We're not sure what Struve is right now. I mean, Struve had that that fight against Arlovsky. We just haven't seen him show any real promise in a while. If you look back at his last couple fights, his last win was against Daniel Omelianchuk back in 2016. That's a long time ago. It's almost 2 years. And that was after a win over Bigfoot Silva. 16-second win over Bigfoot Silva. So that was really the last glimpse of brilliance we've seen. He went on to lose to Volkov by knockout in the main event of their fight in the Netherlands, and then lost by decision to Arlovsky. Arlovsky getting some takedowns in that fight when I don't know. I think he landed more takedowns than he's ever attempted before. So good on him. But that's where we stand with that. Tybura, I think, is a fantastic fighter. I think Tybura is a pretty sizable favorite, and I think he deserves to be. But, you know, at the same time, I don't want to write Struve off just yet. I don't know if we know exactly what Struve still has left in the tank. You look at who Tybura has lost to twice in a row, knocked out by Derek Lewis, and then decision loss to Fabricio Werdum in Australia late last year. So, you know, two losses that you should not be, those are two top five heavyweights. So, and then he won against Arlovsky before that. So Arlovsky just beat Struve, and Tybura has a win over Arlovsky. So MMA math will have you believe that Tybura will win this fight. Danny Roberts versus short notice opponent David Zawada on the main card. Diakhizy versus Hack Parast, who we just talked about a little bit earlier. Nick Hine against Demir Hadzevic headlines the prelims. I should mention that this is a televised card, so the main card will be on TSN. I believe it's at 2 p.m. Eastern. But the preliminary card, Nick Hine makes his return to the UFC after something of a layoff. Oh, actually, sorry, he fought earlier this year. I forgot that he lost to Davi Ramos earlier this year, but he hadn't fought since 2016 before that, September of 2016. And he takes on Demir Hadzevic, and I think Hadzevic also fought earlier this year against Alon Patrick, losing a decision. So kind of a bounce-back fight spot for one of these two guys. Emil Mech fighting Bartosz Fabinski. Fabinski, I believe, has had a long layoff as well. Khalid Taha versus Nadim Nerimani. Don't have much of a gauge on that one. Justin Ledet against Alexander Rakic. Nice to see Ledet move down to light heavyweight. I like what I've seen from Ledet. Ledet is a very, very solid technical boxer. And I think that that's going to be a fun one against Rakic, who is very good. And then on the Fight Pass prelims, a really good fight, I think, between Davy Grant and Manny Bermudez. Now, Davy Grant has been very, very inactive. He has not fought in about 2 years, losing to Damian Stasiak in his last fight, and had lost to Marlon Vera before that. But before that, he hadn't fought since the finale against Chris Holdsworth back in 2013. So he's been very inactive. A fighter who showed a lot of promise, especially with the win over Vera, who's been very good since then. But Manny Bermudez is a great prospect, has some really, really slick chokes. So that's a fight where I think Bermudez could win by a submission. He's got all the tools to do so. Jeremy Kimball's back. He's fighting against Darko Stosic. He's a pretty sizable underdog in that one, but Kimball's a good fighter. I don't want to write him off. And then you got Damian Stasiak against Liu Pingyuan. Don't know much about him, but that's an interesting fight because Stasiak, I think, is a fun fighter to watch. Not a whole lot to say about this card. I think the main event is a very solid main event for a fight night card. Maybe not a televised fight night card, but be that as it may, Shogun Hua is still a pretty big name. And then Glover Teixeira against Corey Anderson is a very good fight as well. A lot of good fights. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not one of these guys that say, oh, this is a bad card, because to me, in the UFC, you can't judge a card before it happens. You got to see how it plays out. You can say it's a bad card after the fact. UFC 208 was a bad card. On paper, it wasn't a very good pay-per-view either. But who knows? If Holly Holm would have landed a crazy head kick on Jermaine Durandamé and knocked her out in the first round, and Anderson Silva would have had a crazy knockout against Brunson or gotten knocked out, who knows? Maybe that card looks different in the past. We saw what happened with UFC 206 the last time the UFC was in Toronto for pay-per-view. On paper, not a great card, but over-delivered. Crazy, crazy outcomes. So don't judge a book by its cover when it comes to the UFC, because you don't want to miss out on what could be a great night of fights. That's always the way I look at it, is this could be a great card. Could be. Could see a whole night of first round knockouts within 2 minutes. Now, of course, you're going to have a lot of filler if that happens in between the fights, but let's see how it plays out. I think there's a lot of fun fighters on this card, and I think I'm going to enjoy watching it. I always do. That might just be me, because I love the sport. Next week, Joe will be back. Look forward to seeing him. He's been out in Sicily on vacation. Now he's in New York for Glory. We miss Joe. Be nice to have him back. And as I mentioned last week, there's a UFC fighter that wants to come and train with Joe, and I don't want to give anything away. But we'll talk about that next week. We look forward to having Joe back on the show. We'll recap this card, and then we'll look ahead to UFC in Calgary. Great card, the Dana White birthday card. And we'll have Olivier Aubin-Mercier on the show next week to talk about his fanny pack, the official Reebok Canada Olivier Aubin-Mercier fanny pack. If you don't own one, you need to get one of these. It's got mustache, like a nice mustache, I don't even know what to call it, like a mustache cream, is it? Who knows? I don't have a mustache, so I don't buy mustache products, but it comes with a mustache product, some sunglasses, some cool shades that Aubin-Mercier likes to rock, a Canadian flag, a shirt. This is a product that if you're Canadian, you need to get in support of our fellow countryman, Olivier Aubin-Mercier, and he joins the show next week. So we look forward to that, as well as breaking down that card, Dana White birthday card, very, very stacked main card, Alvarez versus Poirier, Aldo versus Stevens, Jan Jacek versus Torres, Hernandez versus Olivier Aubin-Mercier, Aldo and Jan Jacek on free TV, folks. You will not want to miss that. So we'll preview that next week. Until then, thank you for joining us. And I look forward to discussing what's going on in Calgary in the next UFC on Fox card with Joe when he returns.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.